So we've been looking at a text. It's called The Book of Assistance by Imam al-Haddad, rahimahullah. It's a book on spirituality within our tradition. And this text has a unique kind of structure in that it's very easily digestible chapters that lay out a roadmap for the reader to approach their own spiritual growth. We're on the fifth chapter. If you want to Google, search for the Book of Assistance PDF, so you can pull up the text. We've been reading it together, and we'll be able to kind of continue with this fifth chapter. Right, and the idea for us in our tradition is that spirituality is not something that is seen separate from religion, but religion, spirituality, ethics, you know, these three things, they synergize and they have overlap. And if you've missed some of the first few classes that we've done, or like the last few months rather, they're all online, you can catch up to them. We're going through it piece by piece, just so we can extrapolate meaning, and not just understand things on a theoretical, but also on a practical level, for our own kind of capacity to implement things. And so, where we started last week on the chapter on regular devotions, awrad, having a wird, and today we'll look at what that is. This chapter is a little longer than other chapters. It's still only a few pages, but instead of reading it kind of the way it's written, we're gonna jump to a part that helps to give a definition of what a wird is in the first place, because likely many of us haven't had that relationship with the idea of a wird in and of itself. You'll see that there's not a lot of complexity to it. It's something that is pretty straightforward. And then we'll jump back to the middle passage, where he's essentially emphasizing the need to have this, and in what way. Do people have the text open? Yeah, great. So if we can just start reading from the beginning again, just so we can kind of summate, and we'll go from there. Somebody want to start from the beginning? You must fill up your time. Did you want to read?
Are you looking for volunteers to read out loud?
Yeah. Oh, okay. No, not, you can't, I mean, definitely read to yourself if you like. But if somebody wants to read out loud to the rest of us, we just read together. No, it's okay. Yeah. Go for it. Yeah, anybody want to read out loud? You must fill up your time.
What chapter?
Chapter 5. Okay. Yeah, go for it.
On regular devotions, you must fill up your time with acts of worship so that no period of time collapses, whether by night or by day, without being used in some act of goodness. This is how the barakah within time is made manifest, the purpose of life fulfilled, and the approach to God, the exalted, made constant.
You keep going.
You should allocate specific periods of time for your habitual activities, such as eating, drinking, and working for a livelihood. Know that no state can be sound in the presence of neglect, and no wealth useful in the presence of heedlessness.
Great, so last time when we were looking at just these first few sentences, the idea was to first recognize the importance of having structure rooted in time management to begin with. Because time management is essentially self-management. And so much of what goes into our own spiritual increase is rooted now in the idea of us being able to both harness time in a meaningful way, but to also understand that it's not actually that difficult to increase barakah in your time. Right, if you're at Jummah on Friday, we've been talking about Ramadan, and I mentioned that Uthman ibn Affan radiallahu anh, he could do a complete khatam of the Quran in one day in Ramadan, that was his practice. He would read the Quran in its entirety on a daily basis. That there were some people who would read it within 3 days, some within 7 days, some in 10-day allotments. And it's the same 24-hour day, but one of the ingredients to increasing blessing and a consequence of blessing is that you can do more with the time that you have. Right? These are not things that we're supposed to just think about theoretically or kind of idealistically, but the relationship between the physical and the metaphysical is rooted in things that empirically you might not be able to demonstrate, but they're still truths nonetheless. And one of the spiritual truths in our tradition is that barakah is actually a real thing. And that there are ways and methods through which we can increase our barakah, our blessing. So if you remember in the last two Jummah khutbahs, who was here for Jummah the last couple of weeks? Yeah, so I mentioned the hadith in both, right? Where the Prophet ﷺ, he says, tasahharu, that takes suhoor, right? Have the meal before you start your fast, the pre-dawn meal. And then he continues and he says, inna fi sahur barakah, that indeed in sahur there's barakah. There's blessing in it. So even if you take a sip of water, it's not rocket science, right? It's a very simple act to increase barakah. Do you get what I'm saying? So the vehicle to the attainment of it is only yielded through the performance of the act itself. You want to have the barakah that comes from eating sahur, then you gotta have sahur, right? So Imam al-Haddad, what he's saying here is that a key ingredient to increasing blessing in your time is to have structure to your routine. You have structure to your day. You know that this is when I'm doing this, this is when I'm doing that, this is when I'm doing this. You build now a sense of structure that then allows for there to be consistency. There allows to be enhancement. Do you see what I mean? If you remember last week, we talked about this, and I was talking about, or 2 weeks ago, I wasn't here last week, but 2 weeks ago we talked about it in the sense of if we say we don't have time, what we're essentially saying is that it's not important to me. And that doesn't mean you have to be defensive, but you're essentially showing what the priority is based off of how you utilize the minutes of your day, right? How you spend time literally in ways that you can understand about yourself through yourself. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? None of the rest of this is going to necessarily resonate if this concept is not something that we build a relationship with, you know? He's so cute. All right, mashallah. I don't know how many of you have been here for like super long, but last time I said that this beautiful boy reminds me of my daughter when she used to run around, because she also had this curly hair and wearing things. And then I said, you know, this beautiful girl. And then mom said, he's a boy. I said, oh yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, my bad. So we're in a place where structure and routine is a key part to this. And words that you want to build a relationship with aspirationally, not words that you take on in a sense that you're demotivated because you self-deprecate, but a big part of this chapter is going to be rooted in discipline, and a discipline of the self, one that allows for there to be a sense of how do I create some of this structure to my routine, that it's not purely about my hours are rooted simply in the acquisition of things that are outward or materialistic, but there's a deliberate sense of me creating a structure that prioritizes what I know for my holistic well-being. So this is where before he talks about the wird, he says you gotta have designated times for your eating, for your sleeping, for your livelihood. You're not just in this place where it's either or, but these are necessary components. So thinking within your own day and routine, do you wake up at the same time every day? Do you go to sleep at the same time every day? Are you orienting your meals around a structure on a daily basis? A lot of you in this room wake up at a certain time because someone has told you you need to get up at that time. Some of you don't even wake up at that time, right? I was a student at this school. I literally was late to every single class, if I even went to class, right? And you can work remotely, rolling out of your bed, getting to a place where everything now is just last minute. And there's no fundamental routine to it. There's a hadith that describes the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where Aisha radiallahu ta'ala anha identifies him in terms of his nature, his characteristic quite often. And so in one of these narrations, she says, "Kana amalahu dima," that his actions were consistent. But the word dima, it refers also in its most literal sense in Arabic to kind of a gentle rain that falls in the early morning, which is what makes like the world green, you know? So the consistency of the acts being rooted in this word, it denotes also that that was a source of nourishment. It allowed for there to be a different source of sustenance through this principle of consistency. And consistency is not going to be yielded without structure. You see what I mean? What makes it hard to have structure to our routines? What makes it difficult to get to a place where my days, they have a presence of my conscious awareness of what's a priority? And I want you to not think about this just in terms of the hours that I spent in a workplace that yield me a check, a degree, credentials, even if that's on a pathway that is for me to be an amazing candidate, to be a spouse, all of it is still rooted here. I'm talking about looking at the structure of your routine, even in relation to that, but in addition to so much, what makes it hard? Why do you wake up at a certain time Monday through Friday and you're so exhausted at the end of it that Saturday and Sunday you sleep till the most random of hours? All it's doing is disrupting your routine and making you more restless and tired. That's on a physiological basis. But you choose how to use your time, right? So what makes this difficult and what can bring ease to it? Because you can decide for yourself, like where the barakah is presented to you as an option, why would I not do it this way? What gets in the way? Does the question make sense? So if you can turn to the persons next to you, ideally in pairs, no more than three, introduce yourselves to the people and actually talk about it, right? And I know because we had one person say it's their first time here. For some of you, it's gonna be your first time. For some of you, you might have been here before. If you don't yield to the process, you're gonna get to a place where you don't benefit from everyone else's insights and we don't benefit from yours, right? There's many things that we all experience collectively and individually. Somebody might be struggling with what it is that you can uniquely shed light on, but when you talk to each other, if you talk about everything else, that's just shaitan just not wanting you to take benefit from the words of the Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam and from the advice of Allah Azawajal that's for your benefit. He's the one that made you in the first place. So he's the one that's gonna tell you this is how it is that you can function with contentment in this world, right? And so having routine, having a structure is important before we can then interject into it a regular wird, because then you're just gonna have a haphazard implementation of this thing. Do you see what I'm saying? So what gets in the way? What makes it difficult? And if you have opportunity to talk about what makes it easy for you, right? On the other end, if you could talk about that for a minute and then we'll come back and discuss and then we'll continue from there. So what are some of the things that we're talking about? What makes it difficult? What gets in the way? Or do you even buy into it, the idea? What do we think? Who wants to start? Yeah.
Well, when you have other people in your life that are depending on you and that have different needs, different structures to their day, it's hard to anticipate what they're going to need at any given moment. Stuff happens all the time that you may plan to have certain times in your day allotted for certain tasks, whether they be spiritual, religious, or work, but then somebody may have, somebody sick, somebody needs to have their homework done, somebody needs a bath, somebody needs, you know, there are always other people's needs that come to the forefront. So the challenge is, how do you stick to a structure that you've created just based on your own needs when you have so many other people's needs that you have to, you know, tend to as well?
So what's the answer to that? That's an amazing insight, right? Because it's really easy to get wrapped up in somebody else's routines, you know? How do you kind of distill this? Any thoughts? So I'll give you an example. I was teaching a graduate class in Chicago to people who are studying to become chaplains. And one of the first things that I said to them in this class, it was about kind of providing care in crisis situations, you know, people dealing with trauma, all kinds of relevant events that yield trauma. A principle that I said to them is that you can't feel guilty about saying no to somebody when they ask you for something. Do you understand? There's no way you can say yes to every single person always. It's just not fundamentally possible. There's hadith, Al-Adab Al-Mufrad, the Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam is described as someone who, when he was asked for something, he never like said no to anybody. And when you look at that at a surface level, you're like, wow, how do you do that? But the way we're taught this hadith isn't about the idea that you just run on empty and you say yes no matter what, but that the Prophet would not leave somebody without referring them to somebody else. You understand? It's real easy to have guilt be the motivator for why you do what you do, and you feel bad when you have to say no to someone. It's very different than having love be the motivator for what you do. That still has a sense that I want to do for you, but you're not inadequate if you're in a place where it's beyond your capacity. If there's not limits, there's not boundaries, everything then is a different version of what he's gonna say next, where it's, you're not supposed to be like cattle. The consequence of this is that you lose contentment and balance inwardly. Even if the spontaneity is based in reaction to somebody else's, you're still just waiting for whatever comes to plan your day. It's like letting your inbox plan your day. Your email is telling you how to live your day, as opposed to you bringing structure to your day. Do you know what I mean? So if I wake up in the morning and I can anticipate emergencies, crisis situations that are abnormality in the course of a routine, but a routine nonetheless, that has to have some type of boundaries and balance to it that allows for me to recognize what my capacity is in a given situation, and that sometimes it's okay to say no. That no, I cannot be here or do this thing for you without you having to feel guilty about it. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? Does it? Yeah? And it's a really important thing to understand. As a caregiver, you want to always be in a place where you can anticipate that I'm just going to be there for the one that I'm providing care to. You can't take care of somebody's heart if you're not taking care of your own heart. And eventually, you're going to get to a place where the burnout's going to impact, and then you're going to have signs that say, like, things are all over the place. And then the hecticness that was already there is not going to have suddenly order brought to chaos, because other people's chaotic lives now rendered you to be chaotic, right? Al-maru ala dini khalili falyandur ahadukum man yukhalil applies in a lot of different ways, right? That an individual is on the deen of their friends, so be careful who you befriend. If everybody around you is without structure and you allow for that to be the defining variable, then you defined your life through that. If you don't design your life, someone else is going to design it for you. But if you say that I'm going to be the one that rides this out, and over the next 3 months it's going to be hectic because everybody's going to yell in my face, you didn't do this for me, why are we doing this, all these kinds of things. That's fine. You bring order by being the influential friend that impacts other people's lives and starts to bring some type of order to their routine. And then if they didn't get it done, they didn't get it done. My daughter wakes up in the morning and she says, I didn't do my homework last night. Well, that's not you, right? I'm not going to do your homework for you. Do you see what I mean? And that's not me not helping her in that moment, right? When she's sitting down and she's engaged in all different kinds of things, an absence of like focus because fun is present, she's still got to get done what she has to get done. If there's an emergency situation, I got to go pick her up from school. That's something that, yeah, has to happen. But there are two very different realities in that circumstance. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? None of it in any scenario is going to feel good if guilt and exhaustion is the motivating factor, right? Mahabba has to be like a key part to it. And sometimes the most loving thing you can do is not enable somebody else's bad habits. You see what I mean? Does that make sense? What else gets in the way? What else makes it difficult?
Social media.
Huh?
Social media.
How does it do that?
It loses your focus. Like if you are already distracted, and then you have this anxiety constantly, it gets addicted, it hits dopamine in your brain and it keeps looking for that reward. And it sort of, there's a point where it fills the free time in your day, like where you're more distracted and then something comes up on your feed and it just catches your attention and you start thinking about it.
Yeah, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to this. What else gets in the way? What makes it hard to have structure?
We just started to watch this new show on Netflix. It's so good.
You watched a new show on Netflix?
Yeah.
What was it?
New Amsterdam.
Oh, yeah?
And then, like, I don't know what happened to, like, 5 hours.
It is
like,
good? Is that what you said?
It's so good.
You watched it for 5 hours straight? That takes a lot of strength.
I didn't even know where those 5 hours.
Yeah.
I messed up my schedule.
Mashallah. Somebody else had their hand raised? Yeah.
Yeah, a couple of things. So I feel like, for one, social life, because we all want to, like, hang out and do things and, you know, go out and stuff. And then kind of like off of the TV or the social media, I feel like activities where you feel like you're resting, but like your brain is off, right? Like, I just feel like I need to relax for a moment, and that moment turns into 5 hours. So I feel like when we might feel like we're resting, it's like brain off activities. But really now it's like 1 a.m. and I need to be up at 10, like 8 o'clock. And then I think that gets... like it like confuses our brain to be like I'm resting, but really you're like taking up actual rest time with other things.
So let me ask you this, in these last two kind of comments, right? Why can't that also be structured into your day? Like, you can't have a depiction of yourself that says you can't watch TV, you can't socialize, right? I hang out with people a lot, alhamdulillah. I do. I was with some of my friends yesterday. We were having lunch after my kids' Sunday school, and we were talking about different things, and they said some of their friends were like, you hang out with Khalid? And they said, yeah, all the time. And they were like, he hangs out with people? And I was like, what do you think? What? I'm not a loser like him. I have friends too. Thank you. You know? But you can structure those things. There's a plan to it. Do you see what I mean? Why can't these things be added to a routine? And that's the whole idea, right? They're not absolutes that are rooted in an either or. If anything, they're a necessity and it's a both and, but you're bringing into it a structure that now allows for you to also say, here's a start time and here's an end time to something with like buffers that are reasonable. Right? But nobody's going to tell you watching TV is a problem, other than the issue here is not like I don't know what this TV show is about, you know? But the issue here isn't like watching television. The issue here is like, how did my time escape me? Right? And why is it hard to have structure around it? You see what I'm saying? Does that make sense? It does. Yeah, so what's the challenge here? Yeah.
I do still feel like there's like unexpected things that come up in life, right? Like your train is like delayed 20 minutes, or like things that just like prolong your day or make them more exhausting that like are unexpected. Obviously things are gonna like come up. So I feel like for me, that's what makes it really difficult to be like, man, like today was really hard. Like I'm extra tired today. So like that puts me out of my like trying to be in a routine. Like I need to sleep extra. I can't wake up early to like have a nice relaxed morning. I need to like wait until the last minute to get as much sleep and rest as I can before I start my day.
How many days in your week are like that?
At least a couple, I feel like.
Great. That's a problem though, right? And I'm saying it with love. If 2 out of 7 days in a week render you extra tired as opposed to tired, the idea that there's like exhaustion and mega exhaustion are the only two options are in and of itself like a problem to begin with. Do you see what I mean? Why are those like the only two yields at the end of the day? You know, I slept a lot this morning, but that was because over the last 2 days, I was in Buffalo and I caught a flight out at 5 a.m. So I got up at 3 a.m. to get to the flight from Buffalo back here. My kids had a presentation in their Sunday school they didn't want to miss. And then I had to pray Fajr, and this is not a good idea, but I just didn't feel like making wudu like multiple times. So I made wudu and got on my flight, and Fajr wasn't coming in for a while. So I stayed awake the whole time. And now I was like super awake. When I landed, Fajr had just came in New York City, and I prayed, but then I was more awake now than anything. And so I like had slept probably 6 hours over 2 nights, right? Not a good habit, but it's not regular. So yeah, like I slept a little bit more this morning. That's not the norm, right? Even when I travel, it's not the norm. If anything, I had planned to catch a later flight, knowing the hours that I was gonna be up the night before. And because this thing came up with my kid's presentation, that was fine. Do you see what I mean? That's not what I'm hearing here, right? And it's also not, you're not the only person that brings this up. Consistently in a given week, the number of people that I talk to who just are no self-care and everything is just running on exhaustion. And it becomes the root of like ill tempers, just really heavy emotions, constantly feeling overwhelmed, like being in a place where there's just dread, you know, a sense of just like, everything is just like numbing as well as agitating simultaneously. And like, why is that like the reality? Do you see what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying, right? And I'm saying it both out of love as well as concern. Those are not like the normal kind of feelings we should be ending a day with, you know? Like the verse that says, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ, you know, that's telling us you work, right? You get free and then you still keep going, but it's still rooted with a sense of like self-care and self-love. Not this idea that you just run yourself into the ground, like, and then maybe the next day, you know, your head didn't hurt, so that was like a sign that it was a little less strenuous than the day before. Do you see what I'm saying? That's a long-winded way of saying like, a part of what's gonna make it hard is, why are you pursuing the things that you pursue during the course of your day? Like, what's it all about in terms of what you're chasing after fundamentally during like the crux of your day? You see what I mean? And is it worth it? Is it really worth the peace of mind that you give up? Is it really worth like the contentment and balance of your heart? Do you see what I'm saying? Right? Yeah. Sure.
But I don't want to stop with this but I also need to do all my classes and do my work. So what if you're stuck like every day, it's just like exhaustion?
Well, it's a hard pill to swallow, but inevitably if you say yes to something, you're also gonna say no to something else. It's gonna catch up to you at some point, right? And you can do all of those things and still be in a place where, let's use a different word from exhaustion, Because sometimes the exertion of oneself in meaningful ways throughout the course of one's day is going to render a time at the end of the night that it makes sense to go to sleep, right? Those are like normal responses. The added elements of like stress, anxiety, being in a place where it has you like running ragged, those are signs of things that are problematic. And each one of us is different from everybody else. So the intentionality that comes to this, why Imam al-Haddad has niyya in the second chapter, that you are constantly going back to saying, why am I doing what I'm doing? And is it getting me to the broader objective? So if you're in college and you're doing X, Y, or Z things, and you know that it's going to yield you at the end of it something, that it has like a time frame to it, right? When I have children, you know, like we have this beautiful child running around here, may Allah make him from the righteous, and understanding that he's not gonna be that age for the rest of his life. And so in the decision to choose to have a child, you're choosing also to understand that you're not gonna sleep throughout the whole night. You're choosing to understand that it's gonna change up like your social activities. But you also have room to understand that at some point those constraints stop. And then it's not about necessarily like, what is this thing that's without purpose? But it's a means to still something at the end of the day, right? It's still bringing you to something. You want to become a doctor? Then be ready to pre-med and MCATs and med school and residency and fellowship and like all of this other stuff. But at the end of it, it's going to still have a point to it. I'm not saying that bringing structure to your day is about like being in this place where you have to come sit in a circle like this for like your spirituality. You can make the pursuit of being an RA fully about your deen. You can make the pursuit of a medical degree fully about the state of your heart. They're not meant to be separate. They're meant to be in a place where they can coexist. That's what our religion posits at the end of the day. Do you see what I'm saying? And nobody is going to be busier than the Messenger of God, sallallahu alaihi wasallam, but he still has contentment. The consequence of using your time in this way shouldn't assume misery at the end of all of it. That's what I'm trying to say. What's the missing piece that creates misery? Like, why is that like a part of this that then has us saying like, yeah, you know what? Just when I'm totally on empty, I'm just gonna sit and binge watch something, as opposed to on my terms, saying I'm clearing out my calendar and all I'm gonna do today is sit and watch this show for 5 hours. Do you get what I mean? Do you see the difference in the two scenarios? Does that make sense? What do you think? Yeah, and if we use like different words, busyness is not the same as distracting, right? And a society that teaches you, because it's heavily laden and consumer driven kind of points of engagement, that like your happiness is in buying these things that we sell to you. Your beauty is in being able to adopt like what we instill within you psychologically. This is what success looks like. Do you know what I mean? How much money is actually enough for you? You have to answer that question. Why are you killing yourself in pursuit of some of these things? You have to sit and ask yourself that question, right? And recognizing then within oneself, like where am I bringing into my routine things that are structured that I can look at my schedule and say, this is about me and this is about my self-care. This is about my spiritual self, my emotional self, my mental self, my physical self. What Imam al-Haddad is positing is that if you bring structure, it's going to create barakah. If you have a routine and you say, I'm going to eat at this time, I'm sleeping at this time, And you have discipline to be able to yield to those things. As you create habits and break out of other habits, you're going to be able to do more with less. That's like the equation. That's what Baraka offers. You're going to be able to do more with less. It's going to stretch. This is why the Prophet ﷺ could, I'll give you an example from the hadith. They get a gift of milk. Abu Huraira is with the Prophet. There's other companions there. And the Prophet says he's going to share this milk with everybody. And Abu Huraira says in the hadith that I was hoping that he didn't pick me to pass the milk around, because then he realized he would be the last one to get to drink the milk, right? And so the Prophet picks him to drink, to pass it around. So he goes to all of these grown men companions, and they're all drinking this milk. It's not like this large thing, it's just a vessel of milk. And then the last person to drink remaining is Abu Huraira and the Prophet. And he gives it to the Prophet, and the Prophet says, "You drink first." And Abu Huraira says, to his astonishment, not only was he able to take a full sip, but he was able to take multiple sips, and there was still milk left for the Prophet. He satiated himself from something. So why there's hadith that say, food for one is enough for two, and food for two is enough for four. It's not that you take a slice of pizza and suddenly you cut it into quarters and one slice is going to be sufficient in that sense. But the missing ingredient is the barakah of it, right? This is what the dua is. Allahumma barik lana fima razaqtana wa qina adhab an-nar. That's the dua you make before you start to eat, right? Allahumma barik lana, oh Allah, make blessed for us, fima razaqtana, what it is that you have sustained us with, our risk, our livelihood, right? Wa qina adhab an-nar, and protect us from the fire. It's all about barakah. So you're in this place where this fuel now, metaphysically, allows for you to take more from less. Do you see what I mean? And that's what like these people did. They stayed away from haram and they engaged in what was the fara'id because it was about also, it increased the barakah. It wasn't worth it to do something that was gonna now diminish this thing. Do you see what I mean? Take the blessing away from it. Does that make sense? Right? I don't want to belabor the point, but on a practical level, just sit down at the end of tonight, going into the week, and think about what your structure looks like. And it takes the discipline of the nafs, because there's going to be people who are going to say, let's go out, and they're going to want to do certain things. You can plan for this. You know you're going to go hang out till 1 o'clock in the morning, right? That's fine. Nobody's saying don't do that, but plan sensibly around it. Don't plan to miss Isha. Don't plan to miss Fajr, right? Be in a place where you're mindful of these things. You also are totally fine to tell people as they continue to do something, hey man, I go to bed at 10 o'clock. That's just what I do. Because I like to be in a place where I can yield the barakah of the mornings. And that's not for me. The hadith says, the Prophet ﷺ made dua for us, that there is more blessing in the mornings. The morning times have barakah to them. Do you get what I'm saying, right? And then you start to engage with the other facets of yourself, because our religion isn't about prioritizing ritual over like a sensible strategy for who we are as human beings and have basic human needs. So he doesn't start with interject into your routine a structure around the awrad, but he says have a designated time to eat and have a designated time to sleep and have designated times to work. That work can't be this thing that just washes over everything else always. And it's always the thing that has to take the priority and precedent. This is the time that I work, and this is the time that I do not work. Do you see what I mean? That's going to be much harder than being in a place where you say, this is when I eat. Because this is when I eat is also problematic when it's the quickest thing you can grab and just sit at a desk when you're just working more while you eat, right? Then you're not eating. You are actually just working as the priority. The structure is, this is the priority at this time. You see what I mean? And the consequence is, you're not gonna feel inwardly just drained constantly. That's okay, where I can, and you know what, the prayers that we have are great examples. How long does it take you to pray Fajr? Like, in all honesty, you could pray Fajr in a minute, right? But the interjection of a minute of consciousness renders now a translated, like, strength, potentially, that can have you going for so much more. You go talk to somebody that you love for like 20 minutes. It's very different when you're running on empty and you don't want to stop doing something for 5 hours because the rest of everything just feels so draining. And this does not feel draining. Why would I want to stop doing it, right? If you're doing it with consistency and you're doing it with a sense of strategy, then it's going to be replenishing in the ways you need it. And you can have a feasible stop to it from like your own sense of what do I really need for my wellness. Does this make sense, right? So as an exercise, you open up a calendar and you just start to burn this routine in, and where you can, you also see like some of it doesn't take so much time, right? You gotta start meal prepping in the beginning of the week so that you got 15 minutes to eat. Then you got 15 minutes to eat, that's okay. You like to take walks? Go take walks regularly. Doesn't have to be every day. You like to watch something on TV? Watch it. That's fine, right? As long as you're not watching like crazy haram stuff, you know? Like what's gonna just impact your heart in a different way. Just like you do it, but you start to bring routine to it and structure to it. And you implement these other things. Allah has already told you that these are the times you pray in a day. You have that as a starting point to base some of these things around. Let's read the next paragraph that he says, the proof of Islam. Can somebody read that? Yeah, go ahead.
No, what page are we on? I have the title.
We're still on chapter 5 on regular devotions. If you're on the... page 17, if that's the PDF you're looking at. Anybody want to read it? The proof of Islam.
It's titled On Regular Devotions.
Yeah.
That page, or is it chapter 5?
Yep.
I can start if you want.
Sure.
You must fill up your time with...
So three paragraphs down, the proof of Islam.
The proof of Islam, may God spread his benefit, said, you should structure your time, arrange your regular devotion, and assign to each function a set period of time during which it is given first priority, but which does not overstep. For if you abandon yourself to neglect and purposelessness, as the cattle do, and just do anything that may occur to you at any time it happens to occur to you, most of your time will be wasted. Your time is your life. Your life is your capital. It is the basis of your transactions with God and the means to attain to everlasting felicity. In the proximity of God, the exalted. Each of your breaths is a priceless because irreplaceable jewel, and when it passes away, it never returns.
This is a beautiful definition of what time is, right? And the transition has to come from us just knowing these kind of beautiful descriptions and shifting to a place that says, do I buy into this? Is this how I see like every breath that I have, right? And the breath is such a unique kind of instrument for us, because even if you say Allah, you have the capacity to say Allah with every breath, right? Just the sources of the letters. You have the alif that's coming from the throat, the lam now with the fullness of the mouth, and the ha is the aspirated kind of breath as it exits from your mouth, right? So within every breath, you have capacity to actively remember Allah, because it's just the way that we've been built in your breaths. In order to think what you know about the value of something, you have to create the time to think about it in the first place. and not somebody else's words, but your own words, right? When you look in our tradition, and we have a definition of taqwa, right? Taqwa is going to be talked a lot about in the coming months because this is what the verse says, right? Kutiba alaykum as-siyamu kama kutiba ala al-ladina min qablikum la'allakum tattaqun. Fasting was written for you as it was for those that came before you, so that perhaps you might attain this thing of taqwa. Everybody's going to be talking about taqwa. There's not just one definition. You see Umar ibn al-Khattab, he had a definition of taqwa. Sufyan al-Thawri, he had a definition of taqwa. Hasan al-Basri, he had a definition of taqwa. They're not changing what the word means, but they've built a relationship with the term and the concept around it, which means they've sat with it and they've said, what does it mean to me so that I actualize or pursue it in my life, right? How do you as an individual know what time means to you? Have you ever sat down and really thought about it? Do you get what I mean? Like, why is time important? Why is your time important? What do you do that gives you an indication that your time is actually important? Right? One of the classes that I teach at Wagner, we base it and frame it off of the top five regrets that the dying have as they're about to pass from this world. Right? An end-of-life practitioner in healthcare, a nurse, she essentially writes an article that turns into a book that she says these were the top five regrets of the dying in their last phases of life. Right? In my work, I go to the hospital a lot. I've never sat with somebody who said to me, man, I wish I had 5 more minutes to go back on the internet, or I wish I had 10 more minutes where I could go fight with somebody again. Right? Their regret is rooted in a recognition of now the days are passing to a point where they're going to reach their final state. And this is now the moment where they're thinking, like, what did I really do with what came before me? And the Quran constantly poses these questions, asking about the utilization of time, like what your books are going to look like, what is it going to be that's presented, and how many pages are just going to be with things that had no benefit or detriment to it. And there was no acts being undertaken. Do you see what I mean? Does that make sense? It might be the first time you've ever actually thought this with someone else and experienced it. But I'd like for you to turn to the persons next to you again and speak about this as a prompt. Why is time important? And how do you understand its importance through the way that you use it day to day? Do you get what I mean? Does that question make sense? And I don't want you to compel yourself to say the right answer. Right? Don't say like what is most profound or quotes like Imam Ghazali rahimahullah's quotes here, but like from your own self, how did you learn about the importance of this? And what is it that you can apply for yourself from a base of understanding as a Muslim, right? How does it inform your understanding of time? Not somebody else's definition of time, but for you, as a believer in this faith, what do you believe ideally time should mean to you? And then we'll come back and discuss. So we can turn to the person next to you and we'll talk about that and then come back. Okay, what are some of the things we're discussing? What? Yeah, go ahead.
So we talked about revenge bedtime procrastination.
What? revenge bedtime procrastination?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
So according to the Sleep Foundation,
yeah,
it describes the decision to sacrifice sleep for leisure time that is driven by a daily schedule lacking in free time. And so it's basically like, you know that you need to go to sleep, but you, because you felt like you didn't have enough personal time throughout the day, you just continue to waste time, even though you know it's going to harm you the next day. So we talked about basically like recognizing that.
It's called revenge.
Revenge bedtime procrastination. It's a real thing.
That's a technical term.
Sounds like a real thing.
Yeah.
So we talked about that, and then we also talked about the environment of New York, of having everything so close to you, maybe gives you a false sense of having more time that you don't have, because of the perceived convenience. So we got deep.
Yeah, and this was a hadith, right? We talked about it, I think. We might not have. But there's a hadith, it's like apocalyptic in its nature. La takum as-sa'a hatta yataqarab az-zaman. The hadith says that the hour will not commence until there's a shrinking of time. And they say, you know, that the shrinking is literal. A 24-hour day could become now a 23-hour and 50-minute day. Right, a shrinking of time, meaning tasks that used to take a longer amount of time to perform now take a shorter time, right? A letter mailed overseas would take weeks, if not at one point months to go, you know, if we're looking at this decades ago, versus now you could send an email in seconds anywhere over the world, right? And then the third interpretation is that there's just less barakah in time, you know, and that kind of creates a shrinking of time, you know? What else do we talk about? Other groups, other than revenge, bedtime, procrastination.
So we talked about, like, whenever a disaster happens, like the earthquake happened in Turkey, like, my mind automatically goes to, is Kiamat nearby, like, the same thing that you said, and it just makes me feel like, oh my god, like, I should be on, you know, not a good Muslim, time is short, and Kiamat should be tomorrow. Yeah, that's
Oh, may Allah make the best of our deeds the last of our deeds, and make things easy for our brothers in Turkey and Syria, and sisters, not just the brothers. Yeah. What do other people talk about? Yeah.
I think it's interesting, like with like the perspective of like social media or like society versus like maybe what Islam might say about time. Like sometimes I feel like it's like YOLO, you only live once. Like, what is my bucket list? What do I need to do before I die? Versus like, what should you really be working towards? Because you know you're gonna die. So like, how should you really be spending your time? Is it like going down that bucket list or like preparing for the afterlife?
Yeah, and we reframe the question to say, how should I be spending my time? Right? Language is important. You can learn a lot about yourself just in the way you express yourself. When it becomes uncomfortable to take ownership over something, like your breaths, it becomes now, I'm going to talk in the second person or the third person, or a broader first person plural, but it becomes really hard to say me. What am I doing with my time? Me, what is Khalid doing with his time, right? It's hard when the course of your day also runs habitually, and there's not paradigm shifts that are rooted in the why of what I do, the things that I'm doing. Do you see what I mean? And if you're in a place where at the end of the day, you have to sacrifice sleep because what you did during the course of the day wasn't really enjoyable, a great thing to ask is, well, why am I spending my time doing what I'm doing? And should I get out of those things? Or is there a way for me to shift the paradigm to be able to say, I actually like, or there's meaning to it that's necessary, right? A great like life tip, you should sleep well. And you really have to think about this for yourself. It's really dumb the way a lot of people sleep. Makes no sense. Really doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And in the course of the structure of this, you have to be able to bring solid routine to your sleep schedule. And if you have 50 reasons as to why in your head right now you're telling yourself, I can't do that, then you've already given Shaitan victory over you. I know for some of us it's not as easy as the rest of us to fall asleep, and life can get in the way. We deal with challenges, relationships don't work out, family is real tough, I'm grieving certain things, nobody likes me, nobody talks to me, right? These are hard things to deal with. But there's still modes through which we can remedy some of this. And the entire idea here is that what you seek in terms of contentment that allows for you to still be sad or happy, because contentment is not absent of these things, it coexists with these things, requires some of these foundational building blocks to be a part of the entire process. And then you don't have to put all of your self-worth simply in the acquisition of just this one specific job, or if I'm married or not, or have kids or not, or any of these different things. Contentment comes from within. Sleep is a big part of that. But in the reflective mode, I would say, why is my day filled with things that necessitate me saying that I need to use my nights in these ways where I don't sleep? Why do you think about what you do during the days in the ways that you do? Are they actually like so kind of abhorrent that you just need to not sleep because of the way your day is? Then like get out of whatever you're spending your day doing. Why would you do that constantly? And if that's not the case, how do you sit and find some stillness and you shift the paradigm of why do I perceive this in the way that it is? Do you see what I mean? Because then you can get to a place where you build resentment. Do you really want to have resentment towards a loved one that you're a caretaker of during the course of the day? Do you really want to have bitterness within yourself towards some of the things that are rooted in responsibility or things that are bringing you to another place? It's not good to have these feelings inside, right? Sometimes the change is not outward. It's an inward change. You see what I mean? Right? Anything else that comes up before we move on?
I think you brought something up last time that stuck with me was you said, why should you be like mediocre? Why can't you be like higher than that, right? Like, so I think we were talking about how time is an opportunity. So if you're actually, whatever you're doing with it, or you're not doing with it, it actually affects like who you are. So for example, for me, why do I think I should not do the extra prayers? Do I think I'm unworthy of reaching my higher self? Do I think something I've done in my past that makes me limited of thinking I could be actually better than just someone who prays 5 times a day, right? So what is stopping me from taking the opportunity to actually wake up a little bit earlier than Fajr and just do the Tu'ar-Rakaat that could be very easy? What is deep down in me that's holding me back?
Yeah. And what I'm saying is, answer the questions. All of you in your responses so far have posed things at some point in the form of a question. You got to be bold enough to answer the question. What is holding me back? What is informing my perspective? Why am I chasing after what I'm chasing? And you just give yourself an answer at the end of the day, right? You have to decide this for yourself. I did not want to go to Buffalo this weekend. No offense to anybody who might watch this from Buffalo, right? It's cold this weekend. You know how cold it was in Manhattan? Think about how cold it was in Buffalo, where it's already always cold, in addition to a polar vortex coming in. I didn't want to leave my kids. I didn't want to leave my couch. I didn't want to leave Manhattan. There's all kinds of reasons as to why. But I still fundamentally know why I got on a plane and flew there. And I still fundamentally know why I woke up at 3 a.m. and gave up sleep in order to come back to something. And those are things that informed prior to, not after the fact. So I wasn't sitting grumpy and mopey and irritated and angry as if it was the biggest burden on the world that I suddenly now had to go do this thing that I agreed to do in the first place. But my self-talk becomes important, being able to understand it. And did I get to go do certain things? No. My kids, I'm FaceTiming them. They're at like some birthday party, having a great, they're like, Baba, the food here is so good, you love it. Like, what are you doing? I'm walking in the snow. They're like, oh, there's no snow in where we are, Baba. Why is there snow where you are? Because, you know, my life sucks. What do you want me to tell you? No, like, is that what I'm gonna tell my kids, right? Or am I going to be in a place where I understand that my perspective is also rooted in my inward state and I'm bigger than any of my thoughts because somebody's got to be thinking the thoughts. Just like someone has to feel the feelings, right? You are not any one of them and you can shift some of this. Imam Ghazali here being quoted by Imam al-Haddad, he's telling you essentially, all of this is encapsulated in time. He's not pulling it out of nowhere. The Hadith Jibra'il, which is a foundational hadith within the Sunni tradition of Islam, the angel Gabriel comes, what is Islam, what is Iman, what is Ihsan? Many of you are familiar with this hadith, gives to us a dimensional understanding of our religion, the three dimensions to it, Islam, Iman, and Ihsan. And then he asks, tell me about the hour. And the Prophet says, the one who is asking knows as much as the one being asked, right? Tell me its sign. But that's like the fourth dimension to all of this. You have Islam, Iman, and Ihsan, and then tell me of the hour, it encapsulates it in time. All of it gets connected to time. That's what all of this is about. Stop wasting time, like, fighting with yourself. Stop wasting time not apologizing to people. Stop wasting time carrying grudges in your heart. Stop wasting time putting off till tomorrow what you could do today. And where you can have micro habits, you engage in them. Especially as we now start talking about the awrad, these are going to be things that don't have to take hours of your time. They don't have to be things also that you do simultaneous with other stuff. I'm running on a treadmill and I'm reading Quran, so I'm killing two birds with one stone. No, man, run on the treadmill and then go and sit and read Quran, right? That's just a product of this like hyper overworked society that you have to be doing like 70 things at the same time. Do you know what I mean? Like that's not what our tradition says. Our tradition tells us if you do one thing, it'll be written for you 10 times over, right? You do this simple thing, you'll get the reward of it 70 times, like 100 times. And this society tells you, you gotta eat while you are on a Zoom and you are also at the same time like changing your baby's diaper, right? None of it makes any sense whatsoever. And that's why you have to ask the question. So you sit down and you renew the intention and you say, why am I doing this? And if the answer that you give yourself doesn't make sense, stop doing things that don't make sense, right? Yes. Great. Let's go to the bottom of the next page. We're going to come back to the text that's before it. But so we now start to have a definition of what a wird is. And so he says at the bottom of page 18, awrad usually take the form of supererogatory prayers, Quran recitations, the acquisition of knowledge, invocation, dhikr, or reflection, fikr. Right? These are like specific kind of things you can identify. This is what makes up a wird. Quranic recitations, prayers, adhkar, dua. And we'll look at different examples in the coming weeks, right? There's a well-known wird that's called wird al-latif. Imam Nawawi has a wird. There's other like awrad we can look at that scholars from our tradition are in a place where this was a regular practice that they engaged in. But to have a base definition now, this is what Imam al-Haddad is giving. This is what the awrad are made up of. It's particularly like a spiritual practice. So it's going to be made up of things that are ritualistic within our tradition. We should now mention some of the properties with which these religious activities need to be performed. And he says, you must have a wird of supererogatory prayers in addition to the textually established ones, and should assign a definite time for it and a definite number which you can constantly sustain. Some of our virtuous predecessors, may God have mercy on them, had a wird of 1,000 rak'ahs each day and night. Such, for instance, was Ali, son of Al-Husayn, may God be pleased with them both. Others had a wird of 500, 300, and so on. The paragraph before the definition of awrad, this is why I said we're going to jump around a bit. You have to interject into this, where if you go back to page 18, one paragraph before awrad usually take the form of, and then he gives a list of what those forms are. He says, it is Satan's way to entice the seeker, the murid, at the beginning of his quest to be excessive in his devotional activities, the purpose being to make him retreat, either by giving up acts of goodness altogether or performing them incorrectly, and the accursed one does not care with which of these two he afflicts a person, a man. Meaning the idea is that ours is not a tradition ever that's about quantified aspects of things, but qualified. Not like how much you do, but how you do what you do. The fara'id, there's no like kind of going back and forth on those. Those are set and structured. You got to pray them 5 times a day at their designated times. But when you are now in a place, and there's going to be more principles that we extrapolate from. So he's going to say in a later chapter or a later paragraph in this section, for example, if there's a defined sunnah practice at a certain time, then do that instead of doing something that is not that. You know, so if the Prophet ﷺ, he outside and he mentions, right, the sunnahs that go wrong with the five daily prayers. But if he prayed Ishraq, like, then pray Ishraq at that time. Don't invent a prayer like you do what the Prophet did. You know, he's praying Qiyam, he's praying Tahajjud. There's set prescribed practices. There's going to be other things that he talks about. But when you are in a place, like I went to Mecca and Medina in June with some friends of mine, and there was nobody there. It was right before the Hajj restrictions started, where you're not allowed to go. And so we were, alhamdulillah, able to go to the Rawda for like 2-3 hours at a time. Every night we were there because it was empty. And may Allah enable us to be with the Prophet ﷺ in the world beyond this one, and bless us to pray in the Rawdatul Jannah again and again, inshallah, accepted prayers. And it was amazing. So I stood next to my friend and we prayed, and we were in our own world. And when we were leaving, you know, I asked him, like, how was that, man? He was like, it was incredible, you know? And he said, I must have prayed like 200 rak'ahs in the 3 hours that we were there. That's okay to do. He's praying in like the Rawda, you know? He wasn't in a place where he was gonna say, I'm going to only do this, but he's not creating worship in the time of the Tahajjud. He's just praying more and more and more. Do you see what I mean? That's what he means by, he says, have like supererogatory prayers that you do, but they can't take the place of what's already established at certain times. And we'll talk about that more. He's going to talk about this in terms of Quran and dua and adhkar. But this point is really important. You're not in a competition with anybody else. You're not. There's reasons why in our tradition there is emphasis to pray your sunnah prayers at your house. Like the companions would go home and pray sunnah. Because the bar to entry is not up here. The bar to entry is like something that makes it easy for everybody. So you don't walk into the masjid and everybody else is like reciting out loud and you're like, man, I don't even know Arabic, you know? Hi. I wish I had a baby. Everybody make dua. My wife will kill me. But make dua. Say, Ya Allah, bless Khalid. With a baby, cute one, mashallah. If you are in this place where you come in and you let self-hate and self-loathing be an entry point for shaitan into your heart, look at how everybody else is a better Muslim than me. I'm gonna tell you something, everybody's got garbage going on in their lives, across the board. And most of us are in a place where we have insecurity with a lot of different things about ourselves. You are beautiful because Allah has said He made you beautiful. لَقَدْ خَلَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ فِي أَحْسَنِ تَقْوِيمٍ. You see what I mean? And to understand this now in this kind of mode, right? That you have these basic entry points, that's what's there, and then you go at a pace that makes sense for you. When the companions asked the Prophet for advice on fasting they can do outside of the month of Ramadan, he tells them to fast the middle days of the month, the 3 full white days, right? When the moon's at its fullest. They say, I can do more than that. He says, Mondays and Thursdays. They say, I can do more than that. And he says, then every other day, as was the sunnah of the Prophet Dawood alayhi salam, he says, don't do more than that. The companion is recorded of saying that, I wish I'd taken one of the lesser advices of the Prophet. There's 2 things that we learn from this. One, the Prophet doesn't start from the largest number of days first, 15 days every other day of the month, but he starts with 3 days out of the month. Then he goes to 2 days a week, then he goes to every other day. Because it's about the quality of it, not the quantity of it. Do you see what I mean? Right? There's literal hadith where the Prophet talks about how a time will come at the end of time and there's not gonna be like a lot of Islam in the world. And the companions asked him, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, is it gonna be because we're few in number? And he says, no, there's gonna be a lot of Muslims. There's gonna be so many Muslims. But we're just not gonna be actually connected to Islam in that way. You see what I mean? And may Allah not make us from amongst those. Mm-hmm. The idea is to not look at success in terms of like rapidly increasing numbers. That's not what this religion was ever about. And no prophet's tradition was about that. That's why you're taught about prophets who had handfuls of followers, or maybe didn't even have any followers. Because the idea wasn't a metric of success that said, look at how many I got outwardly in a certain way. But it was more so about what was really happening transformationally inwardly. Do you know what I mean? You want to be from the ummah of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam on the day of judgment, where he looks at you with pride and a sense of real dignity that this is my community. That's an inward journey. It's not an inherited journey. You're not just a birthright Muslim. You're somebody who accepts it where it's qualitatively accepted, like from within here. So you go at a pace that makes sense for you. This chapter is not about, man, this was the example that was given, 1,000 rak'ahs, how do I do that? That's not the idea. The idea is that you just start reading like one extra verse of Quran a day. There's none of you in this room who could say you don't have time to do that. In the same way you ask the question of why do I not do it, you have to give an answer in the first person. I don't do this for this reason. You see what I mean? When you start looking at your day, you're like, look at how much time I spent today like fighting with somebody. I spent this much time today like speaking ill of somebody. I spent this much time today just sitting down. Like doing what? You know? The structure then allows for some of this at a pace that makes sense for you. The second thing from that hadith, and we'll stop there for today, when the companion says, I wish I took one of the lesser advices, the principle is that when somebody started something, they stuck with it, right? They ask the Prophet for advice, and the Prophet says to the companion, Ya Abdullah, la takun mithl fulan, kana yukumu layl wa taraka qiyamu layl. That, oh Abdullah, don't be like so and so and such and such. Kana yukumu layl, they used to stand in the night, wa taraka qiyamu layl, and then they left, they abandoned the night prayer. Right? The idea is that you just stick with what you do. You start fasting these Mondays, start fasting, keep fasting to the rest of your life. Why would you leave it behind? You read verse of Quran, like, read it, and then read it every day. Engage the book every day at a pace that makes sense for you. You see what I mean? But qualitatively, bringing your whole presence to it. Does that make sense? Any thoughts before we make just a few announcements on some things? Questions, comments, anything? So what I'd love for you to do is just 2 minutes, turn to each other. What are some of the things you're taking away from tonight? And then we'll come back and discuss, and then a couple of announcements, and then we'll pray Isha, inshallah. So what are some of the things we're taking away from today? Okay, what are some of the things we're taking away from today's conversation? Who wants to start? Anybody? Yeah.
Time is the most important thing in our life, so we should utilize it as much as possible as we can.
Great, yeah, go ahead.
And we talked about once we kind of can figure out what our purpose is, it's easier to know how to intentionally spend our time and to find value in our time that way.
So. Okay, yeah.
So we were talking about like the relativity of time. So for example, like I talked about how when I'm traveling, I feel like time, there's like so much barakah in my time because I'm very aware of everything and I'm very excited. But coming back to regular life, it's really hard for me to set a routine and a tribe. And it's because I get bored, and because like things become a little bit monotonous. So like maybe framing the way I see routines instead of being something that's like, because structure to me has like the connotations of boringness and like something that's been imposed on me from like school and institutions. And so looking at it in a different framework, in a paradigm where it's like, actually allowing me to be my full self instead of trapping me, which is how I've been seeing it, might really, really help in me like actually being consistent with my routine.
Yeah, amazing. Exactly, yeah. Anyone else? Yes, no. So as we go into these conversations now in the coming week on Yawrad, supererogatory prayers, which are like your nawafil and other things, like the starting point to do what is additional necessitates first doing what is obligatory, right? That you're not going to get to a place where you do like extra nafil or sunnahs if you're not doing the fard. And so between this week and next week, just pay attention to the relationship you have with the fara'id in your life, you know? And then if you are kind of on point with that, which is hard, it's a struggle for some of us, may Allah make it easy, right? Again, you're not in a competition with anybody else. It's about you trying your best, do you know what I mean? And then you think about your relationship with like the established sunnahs through the Prophet alayhi salam's example, right? The sunnah mu'akkada that we're taught about. And then you think about other things in relation, but just pay attention. It's not about like, let's just run wild with throwing a bunch of things on the table. Just pay attention to your day, like your routines, and start to think about how your day in its entirety, starting where Imam al-Haddad starts. If you don't wake up, for example, and you're not fasting, let's say it's not a fasting day, and you still go throughout the course of your day not eating any food, you don't drink any water, the first thing you put into your body is like I landed from Buffalo, I'm talking about Buffalo today, I landed from Buffalo and at like 6 in the morning I ate a donut, you know, bad idea, and then I got to my kids' Sunday school and they had like presentation and other stuff, we prayed the Dhuhr, and there was a bake sale going on, and so it's like kids gave me these broken cookies at the end of the bake sale. Like, no one needs any, so you want to eat this? And so I was like, yeah, of course, right? I have no self-control. So I started eating all these chocolate chip cookies. They look like ugly, deformed cookies, but they tasted great, so I ate them. But like by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, all I had eaten as a 40-year-old man who had slept for 3 hours the night before was a glazed donut, a chocolate brownie, and probably equivalent of like 5 cookies, right? Why would I not feel gross the rest of the day? And why would I not feel exhausted? And that's not like a grown-up person's diet, right? Do you see what I mean? It's just as problematic to have mindlessness in what you eat as it is to not eat anything at all, you know? So those parts to this are going to be critical. How are you eating? How are you sleeping? All of you is connected to the rest of you. How are you building routine that takes into consideration that you are in control of the way you spend your day, you spend your time, and you fit in now like a gradual structure? Because before we can say we're going to adopt these new practices, you got to get some of these other things in check, and your physical wellness is going to be a big part of this, right? So if right now it seems like you're good on X amount of hours of sleep, you're just chipping away at parts of yourself that 10, 20 years from now, if you live until that time, Allah knows best, you're gonna have regret. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Do you see what I mean? So between this week and next week, like, let yourself be vulnerable and really pay attention to these things in the course of your routine. How am I spending, like, in terms of the physicality of the circumstance, in addition to the fara'id, and then we'll pick up from this chapter next week, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.